roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
Welcome on, Junkie Nation. Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Excited to be with you for the next hour. Got lots to talk about. And we have a very cool guest. Cub Swanson, first guest we've ever had on this show, dating back to April of 2007. So we'll catch up with him because he posted yesterday that it looks like he's ready to take on a new opponent. So we'll kind of get his thoughts on who he'd like to fight, what's next for him. Really, really excited to kind of talk to Cub because he's one of the fighters that we've pretty much talked to every step along the journey of his WEC and UFC career. So I almost want to say his career kind of paralleled ours in terms of our show. We'll also talk about Justin Gaethje, fires back at Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler had done an Instagram chat, and he said that he's turned the fight down a couple times, maybe three or four, I think. And he also doesn't want to fight till December, which is something I also said on Instagram as I was trying to put together the lightweight division. But, yeah, Gaethje fires back, says he's on vacay, man. Why is this guy smearing his name? Paige VanZant says she doesn't miss the UFC. I don't know, man. It's only been one fight at BKFC, and it didn't go your way. But we'll see what happens versus Ostovich this weekend. Our Danny Segura is there to cover that. Corey Sandhagen versus TJ Dillashaw. That's this weekend. Dillashaw back after 2.5 years. Sandhagen, one of the top bantamweights while he's been gone. This has to have title implications. Brandon Moreno's homies with Nate Diaz. We'll tell you about that. De La Hoya, Oscar De La Hoya, Vitor Belfort. They're going to mix it up on September 11th. All right, folks, buckle up. We'll be with you for the next hour. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, July 22nd. So it goes, you know, whether it was Triple G show or here or spinning back click, I know we've all talked about what a mouthwatering fight that would be to have Michael Chandler versus Justin Gaethje. I mean, it fit anybody's palate when it comes to excitement, fight of the year candidate, a fight that's been building for a long time just because both guys had success in other promotions other than the UFC. Yet we all thought, hey, these guys are pretty good. They could hang with the UFC. Well, now they're at the top of the UFC. Maybe not the top. That's Charles Oliveira's spot, but you know what I mean. However, I don't know. Do you think they're going to make it? Like, Chandler wants to fight in December. Gaethje loves his 3 months advance notice. So if they tell him today, the soonest he could fight is late October. So that's kind of close enough to December. What do you think? You know, Ali Abdelaziz might factor in here too because he represents Islam Makhachev and Benil Dariush, so who knows how he's trying to assist those guys in getting fights too, but at least Chandler's not part of his stable, so what he doesn't want is stablemate versus stablemate.
Yeah, I think on that end, behind the scenes, I bet you it's probably a shit show because he represents three big fighters that are all in the mix for that, and then at the same time, I'm sure the UFC wants some of these guys to be able to make it to that title shot again, guys that they like to promote. And I think Michael Chandler's that guy, you know, like he fits that bill. You see him on the Fox desk. I'm so used to saying that as an analyst, he did good there. So I think they genuinely like him. So if I had to guess, I think on the UFC side, they're trying to avoid that matchup with Justin Gaethje. And it's not to say that Michael Chandler can't beat Justin Gaethje. It's just a hell of a lot of risk. And at the end, you could be left with Michael Chandler in a prime spot to get that rematch for a championship again. Or you could be left with Justin Gaethje and you can fire him off again. I don't know. I think on the UFC side, they probably want to avoid that. I think on the dominant MMA side, they got a lot to deal with right now because they have a lot of top dogs in that division, and it's going to get messy. But I will say this. I think neither fighter fears the other guy. I think they've both proven before in the past, looking at their opponents, their past opponents, those guys don't have fear. They'll fight each other. It's just a matter of when and if it makes sense.
Well, why would the UFC fear making that when both guys alleged the UFC's tried to make it? It's just that the other party's backed off, and it's a great fight. They want to deliver great fights for the fans.
I think they waited until they could see that first fight or second fight from Michael Chandler. And I think when they saw the reaction that people have had for this kid, I don't want to say they're going to go the Conor McGregor route, but I think they definitely want to get him back into a title shot. Not protect them, but because everybody's a killer at that division, but nobody wants to fight a guy like Justin Gaethje. It's horrible, dude. That guy's a zombie. He just keeps coming forward. It's nonstop.
But he does. He keeps calling him out. So, I mean, he's almost doing the UFC a favor. Plus, the UFC's got these poster boys like Poirier. That was option B for the UFC. Of course, they wanted McGregor in the title shot. He broke his leg. Poirier beat him. But, I mean, Poirier is a big name alone. So, Poirier versus Oliveira will be nice. I think the easiest way to do this is for Abdelaziz to keep his guys away from each other, is match them up against RDA, Chandler. I don't know who else is left. I always mention Gregor Gillespie because he's been ranked, just doesn't fight often. He's only had the one loss versus Kevin Lee, but he's bounced back since then. But Kevin Lee moved up. Well, he did before he had to pull out of the fight. And I Quinta hasn't fought in a minute. You know, Hooker's coming off a loss. Ferguson's coming off a loss. But the big names, so you could maybe mix them up. But I think Makhachev, you know, I'm about to say Makhachev wants to go upward. He wants to fight someone, but they've been calling out Ferguson. So there you go. Makhachev wants Ferguson. Give him Ferguson. Now that leaves Gaethje and Dariush. Okay. Dariush is trained with RDA. He's going to push back against that. Dariush versus Chandler maybe? And then RDA versus Gaethje, except RDA. Oh, no, that was Dariush. I was going to say RDA once said that Justin Gaethje helped fetch him waters and food, but that was Dariush. So never mind. So there you go. RDA versus Gaethje, Chandler versus Dariush, and Ferguson versus Makhachev. Seems like that would make everyone happy, I think, except the fans that really want Gaethje and Chandler.
But how much does Makhachev and Ferguson make sense? When you look at their records, I could see the UFC doing it. I could see them pulling it off. Right. But really, it shouldn't be happening.
Yeah. Well, let's update here. For one, RDA is saying that he's going to fight Makhachev at the end of October. Then I think he did a little troll job where he said, and if he loses, Habib comes out. Now, Arjun Morgan caught up with Ali Abdelaziz. He says there's no truth to the Habib part. But I would be very warm to RDA versus Makhachev, which means the UFC is not playing any games. They're saying, look, Islam, I know you want Ferguson. There used to be a storyline there with your mentor and coach, Habib, but Ferguson's lost a few. You're on the upward, you know, so we'll see. I think that's the one division that the UFC is not too scared to just draw names and go, let's do this, you know, because like I said, they have a lot of killers right now. I think they feel comfortable with Oliveira at the top. 9-fight win streak, 8-fight win streak, whatever he has, you know, and he's been he's been fun to watch. You know, his fight versus Chandler was fun. His fight versus Ferguson was fun. So I think he's well-deserved. We all wish he spoke English. He probably wishes he spoke English. That might help matters, but I don't know. So Gaethje's just basically saying, look, man, this is my side. Chandler's saying this is my side. But it was interesting to see them kind of go at it a little bit on social media. And truthfully, I really hope they make the fight happen. Let's see here. Paige Van Zandt goes, she says she doesn't miss the UFC. Okay. I wouldn't expect her to say she does. Like, wow, my heart was broken and the way it ended. And, you know, I wouldn't expect her to say that. And she didn't close the door on returning to MMA. And I don't even know if that includes the UFC. Her husband, of course, fights for Bellator. He's one of the top middleweights over there at Bellator. If you didn't know, it's Austin Vanderford. So I think I want to see her in MMA because she's very scrappy. It's just that I want to see her as a strawweight. I'm also sensitive to weight cutting, and especially when it comes to, I think women are more firm, like, nope, it's not for me, and that's it. Whereas with the men, I think maybe because a lot of them come from wrestling, they tend to really, really get pushed towards a certain weight class. I think those 10 pounds make more of a difference with the men than the women in terms of fighting somebody that's a little bit bigger than you. But that's where I think she would be better, is if she did return to a strawweight. Maybe the hydrated strawweight division over at ONE Championship, that might be more of her bag, so she doesn't have to do the rapid weight cut. But I want to see her return to MMA. I looked at her and Ostovic. They might have one combined knockout TKO stoppage via punches between the two of them. But that also means that they're matched up kind of competitively. You know, like one's not an expert boxer versus the other. And I don't anticipate to see that. So do I think it's fabulous matchmaking by BKFC? Yes, I do. But in the end, I don't know that we really have a project here. You know, like Beck Rawlings actually boxed. So when she was fighting for them, she kind of had the edgy side, but she did have the hands to back it up. I always wonder what happened there, by the way. But with going back to Paige saying she doesn't miss the UFC, yeah, I kind of expected her to say that. And she's got the focus this weekend. Do you miss seeing her in the UFC? Do you want to see her back in the UFC or in MMA?
I don't, because I don't think she can really shine in the UFC. MMA, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing her back in MMA, but there's just no place to shine for her in the UFC, because after a while, you do have to be able to produce. And they're just, I mean, the thing about Paige VanZant is she never stops coming forward. She can take a shot. You know, we've seen her bloodied. She doesn't stop. Those are all great things, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to put together win streaks. You have to win. And she just hasn't been able to do that for any long period of time. So I kind of understand her when she says that she doesn't miss the UFC, because we've heard that from a lot of fighters, you know, just that kind of stranglehold of you have to do everything that they say. And she's been able to get a pretty good contract over at BKFC. Something that she probably wouldn't be able to get at the UFC. And it's not because they're not willing to give it to her. We've seen they're willing to give fighters those contracts. It's just that, you know, you got to win. At the end of the day, you have to win. So for Paige, I think even though it didn't really go her way the first fight at BKFC, I think this is the type of fight. This is a really make or break moment for her. But I think as long as she keeps getting a couple W's here and there, I think she can do stuff. And she has room to do things outside of combat sports. You know, that Dancing with the Stars thing, to me, feels like it was very attached to just being able to say this is a UFC fighter. I don't know that you get something like that by saying you're a BKFC fighter. But I'm sure there are other things that she can get. And I think those doors just become more open. We've heard her. We've heard Austin Vanderfort talk about, you know, they don't really need the money. They do well. So I think those opportunities... I think they can keep coming in so long as she can keep racking up some wins here and there.
Well, I'm glad you went that route, because the Dancing with the Stars doesn't come unless she's part of the UFC. The UFC gave her an opportunity to expand social media, to be a star in the UFC. You know, they wanted her in that season where they debuted the strawweights, but because of – they had to do something with the legal age of 21 here in Las Vegas with gaming. And somehow gaming being tied to the show, I don't know if they were going to shoot scenes in the casino or what. I just remember her age had factored.
I know what it was. It was because they have alcohol inside of the house.
Maybe that was it. There you go. Yeah, okay. That was it. That sounds way better than what I said. Okay, so shouldn't go in there, but they wanted her. And look, man, she's scrappy, you know. Everyone focuses on her looks, but she's very, very scrappy, not scared to get hit. And that's why I wasn't shocked that she went to BKFC. But again, in the UFC, she had an opportunity to grow her social media to the point where it is now. She got to go to Dancing with the Stars, where she did well, second place, I think. And that's where she became a star, you know. I don't know if she became difficult to deal with. And so when she had a losing streak, they said, later. I don't know if they'd want her back. I don't know if they'd even want her back as a flyweight, to be honest. I hate to keep harping on the weight, but, you know, I think all fighters kind of say something along the lines of, you know, been there, done that, and whatever. But I've seen a lot of fighters like Verdum and Hendo and Lawler, when they come back, just, I knew I wanted to come back, you know, come back home or circle back. Not because of the money, because if the money is even, your spotlight is just so much more grand in the UFC, you know. But if the money's not even, then I can see where the money may be tempting if you're not part of the championship race, you know. Like if you're not a contender in your division, if your race is run out or it's your age or whatever, then you want to still get paid. There are promotions out there that still pay well, but when everything's clicking, UFC seems to be the number one choice for many of these fighters. Let's move on to TJ Dillashaw and Corey Sandhagen. Cub Swanson, by the way, joining us at 12:40 p.m. Eastern, 9:40 a.m. Pacific. Correct, goes or 45?
I believe 40.
40, okay. So he'll be joining us in 25 minutes, longtime WEC and UFC featherweight. This weekend, the main event at UFC on ESPN 27 is Corey Sandhagen versus TJ Dillashaw. Dillashaw, a former champion in that division, in the bantamweight division, he got suspended for usage of PEDs 2.5 years ago when he fought Henry Cejudo, when he dipped down to 125 to try and become a simultaneous champ. He got busted for EPO. And, of course, before that, you know, a lot of people didn't like him. He was the snake. Him and Uriah Faber, who's uber popular in our sport, you know, they had a rivalry. Cody Garbrandt and him had a rivalry, and TJ just backed into the corner where he was the bad guy, you know, the heel. So when he comes back, I can kind of appreciate that it won't be in front of fans, you know, otherwise the boos would come raining down. But regardless, if you're facing Sandhagen, if the UFC brings you back in Sandhagen, they think you're still a contender. Because if he beats Sandhagen, I mean, that's the number one contender. Does he become the number one contender, goes? Did he just jump the queue and, you know, is he now ahead of Rob Font and all the other guys that have been scratching and clawing for the past 2.5 years? I almost want to say yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think he could. Here's the thing with TJ Dillashaw, right? He needs to figure out who he's fighting for and what it is he wants out of the rest of his career. Because, listen, you can go back and look at the tests, and he passed other tests, and that's going to be good enough for the commission. That's going to be good enough for the UFC. But it's not going to be good enough for the fans, and it's probably not going to be good enough for his fellow fighters, right? It's like when a girl cheats on you. Once she finally admits on it, what's the first question you ask? Who else? Who else was there, right? And if she says, no, it was just this one guy, you probably don't take that. You probably do a little investigating, right? It's just human nature. What he has to do is figure out who he's fighting for. You're right, George. A win here seems like it puts him in a very good spot. But if he's looking for the fans to cheer for him, for fighters to lift him up, I don't know if that's going to happen. I think he needs to hit the reset button. I think what he needs to do is, step one, get rid of any attitude you have. You can't have attitude. After what you did, you just got to be cool, calm, just do your job. Go out there and fight and get the job done in the cage. But you really have no leg to stand on. Trash talk, all that. Get it out of your system. It's all about making money. It's all about fighting in that cage and getting that win. And if the title is what you want to get back, do it. But do it calmly, cool. Do not make a scene, because no matter what, you're not going to win those types of wars. And that's what I want to see out of TJ Dillashaw. I don't know necessarily if what he wants is everything that he had before. If that's the case, you're shit out of luck. You're not going to get that.
Yeah. You know, he's lucky in that a lot of the guys ahead of him can't really put up much of an argument. Jose Aldo fought Peter Yan for the title. He lost. He's won since then, Marlon Vera. Pedro Munhoz has clawed his way up to the top after a couple losses. He fights Jose Aldo, but is that enough to get him a title shot? I don't know. He's in the running because he hasn't had a title shot. But Frankie Edgar, and, you know, he lost to Sandhagen. The others that are there, they don't have much of a streak going. Font is the one guy that has a streak going that I think can say, what about me? You know what I mean? So if Dillashaw is very impressive against Sanhagen, Font should be worried. But if he struggles but still beats Sanhagen, then Font, I think, might have a shot to sneak in there against the winner of Jan versus Sterling, which is looking like, what did we say? I think October or something like that, or maybe even the – he doesn't want to go to October, but that we just spoke to Sterling. I want to make sure I got it right, not confuse him with Volkanovski versus Ortega. That's in September. It looks like that one might be in October in Abu Dhabi. So, you know, if Sanhagen wins, it's his shot. And, you know, Sterling, if he beats Jan, he might be like, I just beat this guy. But I don't know. He may have to face Sanhagen again. But if Dillashaw wins, then I think Sterling would be very happy to fight Dillashaw if he can beat Jan. And if Jan beats Sterling, then now we have the trilogy possibility if it's a barn burner, which I doubt they would do right away. But he could fight Sanhagen because that'd be fresh. So it's deep. There's a lot of great fighters there, especially veterans, former champs, Dillashaw, Edgar, Cruz, Garbrandt, Aldo, you know, some from other divisions, you know, I know that, but still, they got name value. You know, that mixing in with Davilashvili and Simone and Font and the guys going up, it really, really makes for an exciting division. Rivera, Munoz, Asuncao, longtime veterans. It's stacked. It's crazy. Killer. The odds, by the way, I just checked on BetMGM. BetMGM has Corey Sanhagen at minus 190, TJ Dillashaw at plus 160. Sounds about right. I think maybe if Dillashaw hadn't been out for a while, it could be pretty much a pick 'em. Boy, I'd love to just ask somebody that was in the room when they used to train in Colorado, hey, how did this go? You know, that might tell us. I don't know, but that was such a long time ago. Because Dillashaw, even before he got suspended, he had already moved to California, and I think he was doing less of a Colorado scene. So those training sessions must have been like 3-4 years ago. That can't be a true representation of what would happen now.
Probably not. But really, if you look at their bodies and the way they fight, timing is going to be a huge issue. I think Corey Sanhagen can take advantage of some situations. You know, he's a long fighter, and he fights long, right? And I think he can do that to TJ Dillashaw. TJ Dillashaw is very, very all about his timing, his technique, getting in and out, angles. He's got to use that. Corey's got to cut that off, though. He really does. He's got to fight at a distance, I think, and I think he can frustrate TJ Dillashaw. You have to take advantage of the fact that the guy has not fought in over 2 years. So you have to keep him on his heels. You have to frustrate the guy early. You just have to get in his face. So I picked Corey Sanhagen in this one. I don't know who you took. If all this didn't go down and TJ was an active fighter, maybe I would go TJ. But I also feel that the thing about Corey Sanhagen is I feel like he's still getting better. And I think that his game has improved. So that's why I ended up going with him.
I took Corey Sanhagen as well. I feel like that's a long time to be away. Even with the accolades that TJ Dillashaw has had, you know. And like you said, he is not a stationary target, man. It's not easy to get a clean shot in him. He's proven he's got power. He can wrestle. He's got cardio. Pretty much a mean son of a bitch, you know, even going back to those days, once again, of Team Alpha Male, they used to say, this is the guy that went really, really hard. One of the guys that trained the hardest, was the most intense, did not want to get outworked by anybody. You know, that's why he got to the top. I can't imagine that PEDs was why he won the title. He made a mistake, and I'm hoping it was one fight, and I think that retesting seems to be proving it. But that's what happens, man. When you do that, is you cast a shadow, you know, and some people may not be like me. Some people be like, no, he cheated all of them ever since he wrestled in high school. I don't know. You know, and for some, it will never be enough. He's just going to have to take a lot of tests. And like you said, Goes, just keep your mouth shut. going back to what I've seen in other sports, when there have been any of these types of controversies, even domestic disputes, you know, which are horrible, the fans eventually know and just forget or forgive and just give you a second chance. So we'll see. I'm really, really excited for this fight on Saturday night. Again, back-to-back weekends on big ESPN, too. How about Brandon Moreno? He is, you know, Nate Diaz doesn't have too many friends when I should say. You see him rolling around, it's usually the same crew goes from the early 2000s, you know. His brother and some of those guys from the Caesar Gracie fight team or their gyms that they've opened up. Melendez, Shields, sometimes they're tagging along if they're, you know, still in that area. You know, Melendez is still in San Francisco. He has to fly back to Connecticut from time to time, or at least he used to when he was doing a lot of ESPN work or when he was fighting. And then Shields lived in New York. Now he lives in Las Vegas. But still, it's usually the same crew. And it seems like Brandon Moreno is kind of become homies with this guy. And if you look at Brandon Moreno's last month or so, he's met the president of Mexico. He just took a really cool picture with Canelo Alvarez. And I don't know if you follow his manager, Jason House. He posted it. So that was pretty cool, you know. And now he's rubbing elbows with Nate Diaz. Apparently he got a sponsorship from Nate Diaz. And those don't come the way of MMA fighters too often. Good for Brandon Moreno.
Dude, the UFC, man, they got a star on their hands with this kid. This kid is awesome. Like, we've had the benefit of interviewing him for a long time and even speaking to him in person. He is exactly the same way he is on camera. Like, he's just a sweet dude. He's really, really nice, but he can get nasty when he needs to. That's like the sign of a good somebody that you can put your marketing behind. And so it really, like, it's funny that he's hanging out with Canelo because he reminds me a lot of Canelo. Canelo's a sweet dude. You know, he does a lot for charities and stuff like that. And he's not the first one to get in your face and tell you about how great he is. But if you bring it up, he's going to help make that case for you. And he can get nasty, too, when people get in his face. So they're very similar, and I'm glad that they got a chance to hang out and talk. But if you think that that kid is growing on you here in the United States, you should see what's going on in Mexico right now. Like, it's just creating this huge awareness for mixed martial arts. And Mexicans are all about pride, and they're superstars. And, boy, do they love them. Whether they're soccer stars or boxers or now mixed martial artists, as long as you fit that bill and you show respect for your craft, those people will love you till the last day.
You know, they only met at the press conference of the fight card that they shared, UFC 263. And I guess Diaz just thought the world of this guy, sent him some clothes, Represent Limited, that's his clothing brand that he's a part of. And Moreno did the right thing. I think, you know, the way your parents raised you, a simple thank you, man. That was cool. But because he's so infectious with his personality, I bet you Moreno just grew on him, you know. And he said, hey, this guy fights like a nasty alley cat. And look at how thankful he is. Because let's face it, Diaz is kind of like a lot of people in the sport after, you know, almost two decades. Sometimes you just get bitter, you know. You just punch the clock and then get the hell out of Dodge, but you're not trying to make friends. You just know at some point you're going to exit, and you may never see some of these MMA people again. Who knows? But I bet you he just thought, hey, there's a good guy, and I like his style of fighting. You know, let's do it. But, you know, he says they've become friends. He had a media lunch in L.A., and our team was there to cover it. And so we found out about everything that's been going on with him, from meeting the president to Canelo Alvarez and now Nate Diaz. We got a lot of great stories on MMA Junkie, and you can always catch the full videos of these interviews at youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. Well, good on Brandon Moreno. Oscar De La Hoya and Vitor Belfort have a date, goes September 11th. Mm-hmm. One of the roughest days in the history of our nation, but that's when they'll be fighting. De La Hoya versus Vitor Belfort. Okay, so believe it or not, I think Vitor is about 45, but De La Hoya is close to 50. But De La Hoya's boxed forever. Golden Gloves, Team USA, gold medal in Barcelona, and then a champion across multiple divisions, probably at least 3 to 5 somewhere in there. But yeah, he has not led the healthiest lifestyle. I mean, you never really look at a horrifically obese De La Hoya. He gets chubby cheeks. He's gained some weight. I get that. But I'm saying someone who really, really let themselves go. But I got to imagine he still has a bag in his house. Still has some semblance of skills. And he's going to put in some sort of a training camp. Now, is he going to be Mike Tyson, who came back and looked fabulous? Roy Jones Jr., who came back and looked not as fabulous, but not horrific? Or maybe Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who kind of looked horrific, minus a round or two. What do you think? Knowing his affinity for, I guess, lack of motivation and just partying. And then Vitor Belfort, on the other hand, well, we haven't seen too much of him, but every time you see him, he still looks pretty good.
The last few years have not been kind to Oscar De La Hoya whatsoever. But make no mistake, the dude was an Olympic-level athlete and then proved himself in pro boxing, right, with his record and the fights that he fought. He was one of those guys that never shied away from a great fight, all of the monsters that he faced. A guy like that, I just feel like, has something within him. And he has to tap into that. He has to get back to that. And I don't think he would do this fight unless he felt like he still had that. And a lot of muscle memory is going to come back, a lot of technique, a lot of timing. I think he'll be prepared for that fight. But you also got to remember that Vitor Belfort is an MMA guy, but he's a guy that worked a lot of boxing, even from day one. And that guy has a nice blend of speed and power. Now, at his age, I don't know that that speed's still there, okay? But it's decent, and he still packs a punch. So if I'm Oscar De La Hoya, I don't mess around here. This could be really bad for him if he's not fully prepared. I mean, you saw Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., and I know that maybe he's not on the level of the guys that we just mentioned, Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr., people that have recently done this. But he's no slouch either. And Anderson Silva was able to beat him with a lot of volume, you know, and just balls. He just kept coming forward. And that's something that Vitor Belfort has always been good at. So if Vitor Belfort can show up, I think he's got somewhat of a chance. But if you even have half of what you used to have with Oscar De La Hoya, that you're asking for a lot, man. That guy can throw from some weird angles. He can mix that power with his speed. And I don't think that speed will be anything near what he used to have. But just knowing what to do in certain situations, going to the body the way he used to, it should be Oscar De La Hoya's night. Let's just hope we get to the fight.
Vitor Belfort had hands coming through the sport. And now that's all he has to work on is his hands. He doesn't have to worry about checking kicks, stuffing takedowns. Just throwing hands, which is something he loves. He's got power. He's up there when it comes to most KOs in the UFC. De La Hoya hasn't fought since 2008. Didn't he retire on the stool against Pacquiao?
He didn't want to get up on that one.
That was the last fight. And Vitor, well, I can't remember his last fight, but let's say it was 5 years ago. He's 44 now, not 45. That's still a long time. So De La Hoya's about in 13 years. And we'll say Vitor probably in about 5. I can probably look it up real fast to see when Vitor Belfort last fought. But again, Vitor is younger. And those are key years, 44 to 48. I think De La Hoya winds up being 48. I know it only sounds like 4 years, but boy, this is a slow down process. Really, really start once you start hitting those 40s, you know? That's why Liddell versus Ortiz looked the way it did. It wasn't just because Liddell had suffered a couple of KOs. He just got older, you know what I mean? And Liddell was, I think, 50 when he fought Ortiz, and Ortiz was still like 44. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, Ortiz didn't close the gap much when they came to hands. It's just the age, man. You know, you really, really slow down. Plus, you might want to put Liddell in that category that we're putting De La Hoya, you know, the nightlife, the partying. Who knows, man? I think this one's going to be exciting. It's being promoted by Triller, which voted Askren versus Woodley, or sorry, Askren versus Paul, and also Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. They're not doing, by the way, Paul versus Woodley. That's under Showtime. That's a Showtime pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. But Triller was, well, they were going to have this fight card in Vegas. We found out on Wednesday. That things goes, I would have really wanted to see this that show come to Vegas. But they're going to have it in Los Angeles, so not too far away, on September 11th. I don't know what it's going to be like. I don't know if it's going to be like the last time where they had, you know, skits and concert and just, you know, slap, different types of entertainment. What would they have, a slap contest, arm wrestle? I can't remember. Yeah, I don't know if they're going to do all that, but if they can kind of shave some of that fat off the steak, I still thought it was a night of entertainment.
You know, one thing that you have to remember about Vitor Belfort is, like, if you look at Anderson Silva and why he was able to win that fight, is in the UFC, he was great offensively, but he was also pretty damn good defensively. That's one thing that Vitor Belfort, I don't know, does as well. Vitor's not really known for that head movement and being able to get out of situations like that. He just basically says, this is my game, and it's either going to overpower you or you're going to overpower me. But he wasn't really one to make other people miss or anything like that. And that's very, very important in boxing. In boxing, if you're throwing punches and you're not hitting shit, that is tiring. That is incredibly tiring and very, very frustrating. So I just feel like everything that Oscar De La Hoya is going to be throwing is probably going to be landing. And so that just means that Vitor Belfort's volume has to be incredible. He has to put a lot of pressure on Oscar De La Hoya, because I feel like everything Oscar throws is going to land. I just don't know Vitor Belfort as a guy that bobs his head, as a guy that slips punches. These are all things that are important in boxing, and I don't think he does those.
Yeah. And I just wish we were talking about two fighters that at least have fought in the last 2-3 years. You know, like, who knows what we're going to get, honestly.
But you're going to tune in, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I got to tune in for that. At least now we're sending competitive MMA strikers to try and outbox longtime boxers who are definitely out of their prime. No way you could send even the best MMA striker now against a fighter that's in his prime. You just don't have a chance in boxing. So, you know, Anderson has great stand-up skills, and luckily we put him in there against a dog, you know, and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Vitor Belfort has the youth and the fact that he is decent at throwing hands. He's trained some boxing, hopefully going against a partier. And then Woodley, power. Power, and he's been active as a fighter. Hasn't gone his way in MMA the last four fights, but he's also fought good competition. He's confident. You know, like I say, he hits hard. There's a story there to avenge Ben Askren. And then, you know, with Jake Paul, he's still respect. YouTube, the channel, respect. But it's still Ben Askren, Nate Robinson, the basketball player. And then the other YouTube guy. So, you know, he hasn't really outboxed a boxer, and he hasn't really outboxed a striking MMA fighter. So we'll see. I think we have a chance maybe winning two of those.
Yeah, we'll see.
What do we have? Woodley versus Paul.
That one doesn't really count, though.
Anderson versus the other Paul hasn't been locked in yet. And then, yeah. There's so many of these that are starting to pile up now. What were you going to say?
I don't know that. I mean, that one to me doesn't count if you're looking at, like, MMA versus boxing.
Which one?
The Paul Woodley fight. If you can get one over on Tyson, Roy Jones, you know, Chavez Jr., De La Hoya, okay. But I don't know that we can.
But the boxing people backed up Jake Paul when he beat Ben Askren, and they were kind of co-signing and, like, throwing elbows, like, our, you know, our guy. I don't know. I'm going to take that one. You know, I'm going to give them that win. We get the Anderson Silva win. They get the Ray Mercer win over Tim Sylvia. You know what I mean? I don't take – I guess we get Couture over James Toney. I mean, he was willing to come this way. I want to give Clarissa Shields? I don't know, because when Randy Couture fought, you had a former champion against a former champion. Shields is an in – is she wasn't fighting a former champion. She was fighting someone that was 3-6. Now, granted, she almost lost, but I don't know. Who knows? As long as it stays kind of even, I don't want it to be like 12-1 and just be some dog shit, you know, type of rivalry where they're just completely getting over on us. But it wouldn't go good against her, against Kayla right now. Mm-hmm. If they were like, maybe in a few years, but not right now. Not after what I saw in that last fight. But it was entertaining. PFL did good with it. It was entertaining. All right, Cub Swanson's going to join us shortly. I did want to ask you one last thing. Kelvin Gastelum steps up again, goes. He's fighting Jared Cannonier in August. He's going to replace Paulo Costa. And I feel like we've said this before when I think Costa was supposed to face Whitaker, though Costa said I had never signed. He actually lost to Whitaker. Since then, Gastelum was beating Ian Hinch. So, you know, he kind of got his groove back a little bit. But, man, he just fights the top guys, and he's willing to do it at late notice. KG, you got to give him props.
Nonstop for that guy. That guy's not afraid of anyone, and I'm glad that he's able to collect paychecks along the way. He seems like he's a favorite of the UFC, and really, when he ends his career and he looks back at all the guys that he fought, whew, that's a who's who, man.
Yeah, and one thing I'm not sure of is he ever going to now go to welterweight? You know, we always felt like, oh, he's just playing with house money. He'll be back, but I mean, here he is again. This is one of the biggest savages at middleweight. Cannonier, save for his last fight, he was actually kind of on a roll.
Right.
So, you know, he's got that. I don't know. He really looked good against Hinch. And there was a fight that he took. There was another fight that he took. I wish I could remember. But anyway. Mm-hmm. All right, Cub Swanson's ready to go?
Yep.
All right. Joining us now is longtime WEC and UFC featherweight Cub Swanson. Killer Cub, let us sort out the images here, the screens, and we'll be right back. What's up, Cub? How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys?
Good. I really love that car, man. You got the... because you can see the outside through all the windows, all eight windows or whatever you got.
Yeah, it's a Tesla.
Can it drive itself?
I don't have the full driving, but if I hit this right now, all right, now I can just stay in this lane.
No, I see your lovely, I see your lovely kid in the back. Put the hands on the steering wheel, man. I still am not sure about that. I'd rather just ride with myself and my skills and me protect my people than to let some satellite and the steering wheel do it. That's my thought. I don't know what your thoughts are.
It's scary at first, but you only do it in like small, like a small window of time. But it's the first time I did it with my kid in the car, so.
Oh man, I hope people don't give us a hard time. Okay, where are you headed right now?
I'm headed to practice, conditioning right now, and then I get to bring Royal because I go to the UFC gym, Costa Mesa, the gym I own, and there's a kids club, so I get to bring her. Sometimes I bring all three kids if I want to make that person's life miserable.
Why'd you only bring one?
Because if me and Kenda both come and we work out together, which we've been doing, this last month, we'll bring all three, but we both got up late and had a late start. So I was like, I knew she wasn't going to come. And so I try to just bring Royal to, you know, to help with some of the problems.
Nice. All right. Well, this was Goz's booking. He obviously spotted you on social media. Kind of throwing it out to the fans. Hey, who's ready for Killer Cub to come back? When do you know that it's time? You know, when do you know that it's time? Is it just, do you have to get a few training sessions in? Or is it just more of a mental thing where you're like, nah, man, I'm ready to work?
I've been doing this a long time. So I kind of know more or less when I want to fight. And then I know if my body's going to be ready for that. If I have injuries, you know, it's like, okay, you know, now I got my kids' birthdays, you know, holidays, my birthday. It's like, okay, what time frame do I want? And then it's like, okay, I want to fight in 4 months. Okay, well, I need to start training now. Give myself a month to get in shape, see how I'm feeling, and go, okay, can I fight in 3 months from now? And then I you know, send Sean Shelby a message saying, hey, I'm looking at this time frame. I'm already in the gym. So, because you never know if they're going to say, okay, well, we want you to fight in 2 months. You better be ready, you know? So I gave myself a lot of time and planned it out. So that I try to be, I try to always make it so I'm in good shape when I get into the fight.
What's your window that you're looking at? Is there a certain month or even a date, exact date or and card?
No, I just told him around October, and I know it could be a little sooner, it could be later, so I'm just waiting to hear back from them, and so I'm just trying to get in shape and you know, just make sure that, you know, got the wheels turning, and then I got a running start when I start camp.
Well, here's the Russian roulette you're playing with. If you really love fighting close to home, obviously these fight nights, they're all in Vegas, you know? There's also a big Vegas show on September 25th, which is in October, but it's very close to. But if you want to get away from it all and go halfway across the world, they're going to start building a card in Abu Dhabi. Are you open to that, or are you open for more of a local show?
I like fighting closer to home. I mean, I'm not opposed to traveling. I've done it multiple times. But it's so much easier, like, mentally packing for a fight. To when you have to fly, you only got so many bags, and you have to play the game of, do I take this or don't take this? You know, it's like recovery equipment or extra gear. You have to, like, pack for you know, because nobody wants to have too many bags. You know, like when me and Juan Archuleta went to his last fight. We brought 12 bags between the two of us, because he has, like, so much equipment that he wants to bring, which is, you know, wild. It was expensive.
What do you guys, the Kardashians, like, or what? 12 bags.
Well, he had like I don't know, like $40,000-$50,000 in recovery equipment that he brought out, because he likes to do everything. And so yeah, for me, last time when I fought in Vegas, I rented a little Ford Transit and packed my Airdyne bike in there, all my recovery equipment, and I drove that out. So that way I had everything I had at home, I had at the hotel.
Wow. So when it becomes time to send that email and say, hey, Cub Swanson's ready to go, does that email say, Cub Swanson's ready to go, and this is who I would like, or Cub Swanson's ready to go, what you got for me?
Well, now it's been a little different, because we haven't talked about it a whole lot, but I've been managing some fighters, obviously, because my manager, his passing, I took over a lot of guys with a partner of mine, Monty. So now the emails are like, hey, Sean, I'm ready for this date. My other fighter, Rafa Garcia, he's looking good. He'll be ready. My other guy, Dan Argueta, who's on the Ultimate Fighter show, call that out. So now I'm talking to him on, you know, different fronts, as a fighter and a manager. So it's been interesting, and it's been a good learning experience.
I know that that's also sort of been a passion for you, and not just as of late, kind of your whole life. I've always noticed you try and help other fighters, and because you took a lot of chances in your training early on, going to different places, and you were one of the first guys to actually train with high-level boxers, and I remember you would share those experiences. Can you maybe talk a little bit about some of these guys, like, you know, Anderson Silva, Vitor Belfort, Tyrone Woodley? Now, granted, the Paul brothers aren't on the level of some of the guys that you actually had to train against and train with, but what is it like that first year of training with boxers, and how long did it take you to feel comfortable with those type of guys?
It took me a while to really get comfortable. In the beginning, you're just kind of surviving, because you're playing their rules. I think a lot of these guys that went to boxing gyms kind of went for little stints like I was there. It was like my main training, and I was there every day. So I'd spar a couple days a week, and then the other days I'm hitting the bag doing their whole routine. Okay, you show up, you shadow box four rounds, you get your gloves on, you start hitting this bag for two rounds to work uppercuts, then you work this bag to work this, and it's like a whole long thing, and then you end up, I may hit some mids, I'll jump rope, you know, it's like an hour and a half of just doing hands, you know, so it's a whole different dynamic, but, you know, getting in there and being able to perform against other boxers is definitely a curve. It's a whole different animal. The first thing is distance. I think that's the biggest thing that people don't realize, is the distance is so different in boxing versus MMA. You're a lot closer in boxing, so you can use your jab. So in MMA, the first thing they're saying is establish your jab. Well, you kind of have to double or triple jab to get to close the gap. So just a single jab doesn't always work, because in the beginning you're so worried about takedowns and kicks that you fight from a further distance. So it changes your stance, it changes your game plan. It's so different. But the skills that you learn are you know, pretty valuable if you can translate them.
Do you think before your career is over, at some point you might give this a try, going in there and doing something like that? Because you kind of have that mindset, you have that experience of training with them, that I think it would be a lot of fun to see you go in there and do a little boxing.
I mean, I tried for years. You know, I brought it up to Sean many, many times years ago. Even when I was in WEC, I asked if I could do boxing at the same time, because my coaches were pretty impressed with how I was doing. And they said absolutely not. They told me that if I wasn't focused 100% on MMA, then I should, you know, they would let me go and let me. They said that they wanted all their fighters to be focused 100% on you know, trying to win the belt. So I thought about switching to boxing for a while, and I just thought to myself, well, what's going to happen is I'm going to spend, you know, 3-4 years at least trying to make it to the top, and then I'll be right there, possibly in the top 10, top 20, and then I'm going to be having to do that extra to make it to the very top. And I'm like, I'm already there right now in MMA, so it just didn't make sense. And so I wasn't able to do it. So I was a little annoyed when you know, the UFC allowed Conor to do it, but that was a lot of money to be made. And, you know, I see why they would, you know, go that route. But I definitely was trying to do it a long time ago.
How the times have changed. I remember when you lived in Palm Springs, and I said, man, you should come to Orange County. You got the cool coastal air, you know, the great weather. And I can tell you just did the 55 to the 405. I can tell by the buildings, and I can see the clear skies out there. And we're in the fucking desert now with scorpions and rattlesnakes and cactuses. Oh, sorry. I shouldn't have cussed. I'm sorry, because your daughter's there. Sorry about that. But yeah, well, you know, knowing you so long, like, things flipped, you know. Now you're not near the beach.
I know, but it's my wife. She came out to the desert with me like a trooper, pregnant in the summer. And then when she got pregnant with twins the next summer, she was like, yeah, I'm not doing this again. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. And I had already been driving out here, so we just decided to make the move. And now I'm a wuss. Now I'm like, I can't handle the heat anymore.
Hey, speaking of your wife, how about that tweet, man? Don't F with MMA wives. You know, she was, yeah. I think that was obviously with the Jolie Poirier incident. Or sorry, yeah, Jolie Poirier and McGregor incident, right?
Yeah. I mean, I never was a fan of that. You know, that's why I never was a fan of Conor. I think he's a extremely talented guy. But I just don't like that, you know, and a lot of people don't. It's like, you could talk about knocking me out and kicking my ass, and even some of my teammates, like, we're all in this sport. Yeah, but my wife and kids aren't. And I don't think you should talk about religion, someone's religion or their family. Those are kind of off limits. And
yeah,
when people are crossing the line thing, you know, something bad happens to them, it's like, I don't feel sorry for you. You know, you kind of brought that on yourself.
I thought that was pretty cool that she and others collectively had Jolie Poirier's back.
Yeah, yeah. I thought so as well. And I, Kenda's been, you know, for a while, she's been having the idea of wanting to start like an MMA wives, like chat, you know, like all of them get together and be able to like, you know, talk, because, you know, all the attention's always on us, the athletes, and, you know, our significant others are there, and they have the ups and downs and the emotional roller coaster too. And, they don't always get to, you know, talk about it and with somebody that understands. So she's always been wanting to do that, kind of get the MMA wives together and kind of like, be there for each other. So I think that was just her way of supporting.
I know we got to wrap up with you soon, but as long as I see you driving, I'll just fire off a couple quick questions. Any thoughts on 35? We've discussed this before. You said you've been open to it, or are you still locked on 45?
I'm open to it. I talked to the UFC, and I told them that I was open to it, but I was really trying to diet, and that wasn't going so well. I just know that I would need a good amount of time. But I remember when me and Aldo fought way back, we almost had the exact same body frame. And once I saw him make it was like, okay. But yeah, it just, I know what it feels like when I'm at 145 pounds, and yeah, just to think another 10 pounds on top of that seems, you know, scary, but I know I could do it. It just, we'll see. I think I'll still be at 45 for at least one more fight. We'll see what happens. I know it's difficult for the UFC because I've fought so many people in the division. So it gets a little hard to matchmake, but there's still tons of good talent. So we'll see.
Lastly, Goes asked that question about, you know, the email that you send. Do you send away, you know, do you focus on some names? And then that's when you kind of introduce that you're managing fighters. Let me just try one more time. But was there a name that you did offer up, or have they even already responded to you and say, well, this is what is available? Just because it gets us excited, you know, like, oh, man, that'd be dope, you know, if you fought so-and-so.
Yeah, I don't like to call people out. It's never kind of worked out for me either. I tell the UFC, you know, I'm ready, and then they give me names, and then sometimes they give me multiple names. I'll say I'll take both of them because I know one of them will take it and one won't. You know, so it's like, I don't really care. It doesn't matter who it is. My first thought is always like, oh, and then I have to like mentally go through the process and go, okay, this is how I'll fight this person, you know? So it really doesn't matter who it is. I just need the name, and then I can start planning for it.
That's, well, you've had an incredible
for almost 20 years. So, you know, it's kind of hard to break.
And we can't argue with it, man, because you've had an incredible career. You've given us some great fights. Whatever the next one will be, we'd love to cover it. Thanks so much for the time, and go have a good training session. And thanks for spending some time with us here on Junkie Radio Cub. Love you as always, man.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. I just want to say I got my fighter, Rafa Garcia, fighting next weekend. He's going to be a huge Mexican star. He's with me and Bloodline Management. That's our management company. And, yeah, Rafa Garcia is a huge star. And you guys will be knowing about him real soon. And he's over there training with Justin Gaethje. That's why I was over there in Colorado. I was checking in on him, and yeah, we got some good guys. So, and as soon as I get a fight, I'll let you guys know.
Sweet. All right, thanks as always for the time. Take care.
All right, guys.
See ya. Thank you.
There he goes, Cub Swanson. What a stud, man, that guy.
Yeah, honestly. Have you ever seen that gym that he owns?
I've driven by it.
Yeah, it used to be a car dealership, I think, so it's kind of got like this cool look to it.
Yeah, I've driven by it, and one time when I was there about 2 years ago, I go, are you nearby? And he wasn't, but then he gave me a date that he might be there because, you know, I wanted to see him there and maybe get a tour or something. I've driven by it quite a few times. It's on Harbor Boulevard over there by Orange Coast College. But, you know, last 18 months were just a whirlwind for me. So I haven't really been in California as much. Only started really going recently. So I would definitely love to go back. I know a lot of his training gets done there now. I recall the last time he was with us. I'm not sure if that was when he was on the bike or not for 45 minutes when we were talking to him. But he wasn't doing as much training at the training lab. He was doing more of it down at his gym with his guys, which includes Archuleta, Dillashaw. I think Ortega comes down and mixes it up with those guys as well. So they have a nice crew there. And want to thank him for his time today. And it was a fun show. We covered a lot. You know, there's a lot of news out there. And, of course, you can get all of this news on MMA Junkie. Check out and download our free app that's available on all smartphones and tablets. I ran into some MMA fans, probably the last three or four people that have told me how much they love Junkie. I go, you got the app, right? And three of the four said, no, I don't. And I made them download it, and they've loved it right away when they casted their eyes on it. It's super fast to download an app nowadays. And like I say, it works on all smartphones and tablets. Shout out to Eric Pena, goes our cousin. I saw him the other day. He goes, man, I got it. He goes, I got it. I use it. I think he even beat me to it because he said I'm watching the fights every weekend. And I think I went like this. And that's how usually my, you got the Junkie app face. And he goes, I got the app because I got it. So shout out to him. Here in Las Vegas. And shout out to my cousin Connie as well. She just dropped a single. Reggaeton, that's your jam. All right, so lastly, I want to let you all know that we are going to be doing a watch-along for UFC 265 on August 7th, I believe. And that's Derek Lewis versus Ciryl Gane for the UFC's Interim Heavyweight Championship. I can't believe I'm even saying that. I've seen Ngannou like three times in the last couple of weeks. So fit, training, looking good, you know what I mean? Like, that's not an injured fighter or whatever. But whatever, that's what they're going to do. They're going to do that. They're going to do Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena, you know. So, all right, they're going to run that card. Jose Aldo's on the card as well versus Pedro Munhoz. I mentioned that in the Cub Swanson interview. But yeah, we're going to be doing a watch along for that event, UFC 265, August 7th. Yeah, Kelvin Gastelum had fought. I was trying to remember Whitaker, Heinisch, and Hermanson have been his last few opponents. And he beat Heinisch to stop the 3-5 losing streak against Adesanya, Till, and Hermanson. But in the Whitaker fight, even though he lost, and even though he lost convincingly, I still thought he looked good and fought well. It's just Whitaker fought even better. So that's why I think Gastelum is telling himself, I went the distance with the champ, and I just competed decently against the former champ, so I can still have my Mexican food and stay at 185. I don't know if he'll ever go down to 170. I bet you'd go down to 175 if they ever created 165 and 175, but I've spoken my piece on that one for a long time. Also, a quick preview to next Monday. We will be talking to John Anik. He will be our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. In the meantime, we're going to leave you all now. Thanks for spending the last hour plus with us. And check out our other franchises like Legend the Legend, Rankings Report, Spinning Backlick, all available on youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. All right, for Goz, I'm George. Have a nice day. Go out there and be a champion.